BOA 1, the hits.
Come on, Harry.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak, Gregory Stockel, Jill Robbins, and John Russell. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Dan Novak.
Britain is celebrating Queen Elizabeth II's 70th year on the throne. The four-day celebration, called Platinum Jubilee, began Thursday with a parade called Trooping the Colour. The yearly military parade has marked the monarch's official birthday since 1760. The Queen appeared on the balcony of Buckingham Palace with a small group of family members for a military flyover. Thousands of people were on the parade route. Many carried British flags, party hats, or plastic crowns. "You're never going to see this again in your lifetime," one woman said. "At least not in mine. Maybe not in my daughter's. 70 years, it is all I have ever known." The 96-year-old queen is Britain's longest-serving monarch. She is the first to reach 70 years on the throne. The celebration of Elizabeth's reign includes a service Friday at St. Paul's Cathedral in London. There will also be a concert at Buckingham Palace on Saturday, and a performance put on by thousands of people from schools and community groups around the country on Sunday. Thousands of street parties are planned around the country, a tradition that began with the Queen's coronation in 1953. Several protesters were arrested Thursday after getting past barriers and onto the parade route. The group Animal Rebellion claimed responsibility, saying the protesters were demanding that royal land is reclaimed. The Jubilee is giving many British people a chance to think about the monarchy and the changes that have happened to the country since she took the throne. 14 prime ministers have taken office since Elizabeth became queen. Former Prime Minister John Major said her presence has helped provide direction for the country. "The Queen has represented our better selves for over 70 years," he told the BBC. In a written Jubilee message, the Queen thanked people in Britain and across the Commonwealth involved in organizing the celebrations. The Commonwealth is a group of 54 nations, most of which are former territories of the British Empire. For many, the event is the first chance for a big party since the start of the coronavirus pandemic. Other world leaders also sent their congratulations. French President Emmanuel Macron said the Queen is one of very few constants in the world. And former U.S. President Barack Obama added, "Your life has been a gift, not just to the United Kingdom, but to the world." The long weekend's first event, Trooping the Colour, refers to a battle flag, or colour. The yearly tradition is a reenactment of the way battle flags were once shown to soldiers during fighting. Each year, a different unit in the Army's Household Division has the honour of trooping its colour. The 1st Battalion of the Irish Guards has the spotlight during the Platinum Jubilee. Riding on horseback, Prince Charles, representing the Queen, received the salute from the guards along with his sister, Princess Anne, and his son, Prince William. There is also some attention on those who will not be present. Prince Andrew, the Queen's second son, settled a lawsuit in which he was accused of sexually abusing an underage woman. he is not expected to attend the celebration. The Queen's grandson, Prince Harry, and his American wife, Meghan, stepped down from royal duties. They watched the parade, but were not present at the palace. Opinion studies show Elizabeth remains very popular and respected among British people. One study showed 8 in 10 people held a positive view of her. Another one found that 3/4 of British people thought she had done a good job as queen. I'm Dan Novak.
The big international car makers like General Motors and Volkswagen may think their electric vehicles, or EVs, will keep selling well in China, but they could face a surprise. Local car makers have already taken a big share of the world's largest car market. It is estimated that car sales amount to $500 billion in China each year. When Beijing office worker Tiana Chung planned to buy a car, she chose between 3 Chinese brands, XPeng, BYD, and NIO. She did not consider foreign cars. If I was buying a gasoline car, I may have considered foreign brands, the 29-year-old said as she drove home from work. But I wanted an EV, and other than Tesla, I saw few foreign brands applying advanced smart technology properly. Chung said that foreign car brands did not have what she was looking for. She wanted an EV able to give her the comfort of having a smartphone-like experience in her vehicle. Foreign brands are so far from my life and lifestyle, said Chung. She uses a mobile device to connect to shopping websites and control the windows and music while she is in her car.
Chung is one of many Chinese who are buying electric vehicles. The China Association of Automobile Manufacturers reported that sales increased in the first 4 months of 2022. During that time, the number of electric or plug-in hybrid passenger cars more than doubled from a year earlier to 1.49 million cars. Vehicles with these kinds of technologies represent 23% of China's passenger car market. However, vehicle sales fell 12% because of a drop in demand for gasoline cars. There are almost no foreign brands among China's top 10 makers of so-called new energy vehicles this year. The only exception is Tesla, which is in third place. All the rest are Chinese brands, from BYD and Wuling to Chery and XPeng. China's leader is BYD. The company has sold about 390,000 EVs in the country this year. That is more than 3 times as many as worldwide leader Tesla sold in China. The top-ranked traditional car maker is Volkswagen's Fa Group, in 15th place for EV sales. Since the 1990s, foreign car makers sold 60-70% of the passenger cars in China. But in the first 4 months of 2022, their sales went down to 52%, and in April it was at 43%. Nissan chief Makoto Uchida told Reuters that some brands could disappear in 3 to 5 years in China. Local brands are becoming stronger, said Uchida. He added that the quality of EVs from Chinese makers had improved quickly, with progress being made in the space of months. He said foreign car makers had to move quickly in the design, development, and launch of new models. He warned, "If we were slow, we would be left behind."
Bill Russo is a former Chrysler executive who now heads the Shanghai-based advisory business Automobility. He said foreign brands need to change the situation quickly because they control less than 20% of China's only growth auto market. Chinese brands are winning the race to EV, said Russo. He added that consumers' desire for cars that are more like smartphones on four wheels is not likely to change. He considered this a problem because traditional companies are not high-tech natives. General Motors, or GM, is now trying to gain younger buyers in big cities. The company announced plans to spend more than $35 billion worldwide by 2025 to make electric cars. That includes more than 30 new EVs, over 20 of them in China. This year, for example, GM will launch the all-electric Cadillac LYRIQ sports utility vehicle. GM said it was using smart technologies, including driver assistance on highways, high-level or aviation-grade cybersecurity, and wireless software updates.
Volkswagen is spending $55 billion worldwide on EVs by 2026. Its new ID series began selling in China early last year. VW missed its goal of selling 80,000 to 100,000 ID cards last year. It has sold only 33,300 cars through April. One concern for foreign brands is that their new EVs are aimed at the American and European markets. The cars are designed for performance and to last a long time. But drivers in China rarely can drive faster than 60 kilometers an hour because of crowded roads. Volkswagen said EV demand in China was strongly linked to the smart car idea. It is investing more in local research and software. Among those the international car makers need to attract are people in big cities with money to spend. Li Huayuan, a civil engineer from Shanghai, is one of those customers. Li briefly considered Japanese and German brands before he bought his BYD electric car last year for $43,000. "Seems to me only Tesla stands out when it comes to American brands," he said from his parked BYD car in the city of Mianyang in Sichuan, where he is working on a project. "The other brands don't even look competitive to me," he added. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Gregory Stockel.
The simple three-letter word but might not sound or look special, interesting, or beautiful. But this little word can be a powerful force in writing and in speaking. It can play an important part in creating colorful, interesting sentences. In this everyday grammar, we will explore how a simple connecting word makes for good storytelling. The word but has many uses. It can act as a coordinating conjunction, preposition, adverb, and sometimes even a noun, as in the expression, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. For today's report, let's explore the part but plays as a coordinating conjunction. A conjunction joins two things together. When acting as a coordinating conjunction, but is used to add information to an earlier statement that usually contrasts with it in some way. We often use but to connect two clauses or groups of words that have a subject and a predicate. Consider these lines from The Diamond as Big as the Ritz by F. Scott Fitzgerald.
John strained his eyes to see whether there might be men coming down the mountain, but the mountain was bare of human life.
The first clause starts with John strained his eyes, and the second clause starts with but the mountain. The first part of the sentence suggests an effort, straining of the eyes. The second part of the sentence suggests that the effort was to no use. John did not see anyone. Consider how the sentence might have been different if but were not used. It might be something like this.
John strained his eyes to see whether there might be men coming down the mountain, and he didn't see anyone.
This sentence is much less interesting. Let's explore why. In the book Storyworthy, the American storyteller Matthew Dix described a few words that can bring a story to life. One of these words is but. Dix says but has an interesting effect on the reader or listener. The words that come before but create an expectation. What comes after but goes against the expectation. This creates interest between statements and ideas. Other common conjunctions, such as and, do not have the same effect, Dix believes. Speaking or writing that uses and too much becomes more like a list, and lists are not very interesting. Now, it's your turn to do an exercise. Take these two statements and connect them using but. You can pause the audio after the second statement if you need more time before hearing the answer.
She said she had lost their address long ago. A few days later, it miraculously turned up.
Here is one way to connect the two statements. It comes from the short story That in Aleppo Once by Vladimir Nabokov.
She said she had lost their address long ago, but a few days later it miraculously turned up.
This report is not only about telling stories. It is also about exploring connections between ideas. Such connections are important for expressing more complex language in writing and in speaking. Remember, like any word or structure, it is good to use but in the correct amount. It is like cooking. You need the right amounts of the right ingredients to get a nice finished product. If you add too much of any one thing, the result might not be very good. The next time you read stories or listen to English speakers, pay careful attention to how they use but. It's a small, simple word, but it can bring variety and richness to your language. I'm John Russell.
on our national parks journey, we head to southern Florida. Here, you will find blue-green seas, marine wildlife, and islands that hold thousands of years of human history. Welcome to Biscayne National Park. Biscayne is not very far from the lights, noise, and excitement of downtown Miami. But it has a very different atmosphere from the big city. Biscayne National Park was established as a national monument in 1968. It became a national park in 1980. That year, its size also increased. The park now covers more than 70,000 hectares. It includes the northern part of the world-famous Florida Keys. Keys are low-lying islands or reefs.
If you enjoy water, Biscayne is the park for you. 95% of the park is water. Many kinds of animals live within the park. Some of them are threatened or endangered. You will find the huge, gentle West Indian manatee, the less gentle American crocodile, several kinds of sea turtles, and more than 500 species of fish. Four ecosystems come together here, which is what makes the park so diverse. The blending ecosystems create what is called edge communities. These edge communities support a huge array of wildlife. The underwater diversity is what attracts most people to Biscayne National Park. Many visitors come here to snorkel or scuba dive in Biscayne's clear and warm waters.
Human history at Biscayne begins more than 10,000 years ago. Scientists say evidence of the area's earliest people is mostly underwater now, as water levels have risen over time. Within the last 3,000 years, people began to settle in the area. Scientists continue to learn about these people by examining the big hills of shells they left behind. The shells contain other waste, too, including early tools and housewares. As the population grew, it divided into separate cultures. The groups began making pottery and created trade networks. These Native Americans are called the Tequesta. The Tequesta depended on the rich food source of the sea to survive. They were not centered on farming, which requires huge amounts of time. So the Tequesta had more time than other natives for art and religion. Very complex social structures developed as a result. European explorers began arriving in the area in the early 1500s. They brought with them diseases like smallpox and measles. Over time, these diseases killed huge numbers of Florida's natives. Early explorers arrived in the area on ships. The reefs and rough waters made it difficult for ship captains. Biscayne's waters contain more than 50 shipwrecks. Scuba divers today can explore 6 of them.
Among them is the Earl King, which sank
in 1891. It was built in 1865. Earl King was mostly used to transport goods, but it also carried wealthy passengers. In its first few years of service, it was used for trading between China and Australia. The ship hit Long Reef as it sailed to New Orleans from England in 1891. Its machinery and other parts were saved, but Earl King itself sank to the sea floor. Another shipwreck that scuba divers can explore is the Lugano. The British steamship sank in 1913. At the time of its sinking, it was the largest ship ever to wreck in the Florida Keys. It was traveling to Havana, Cuba, carrying goods and more than 100 passengers. Most of them were Spaniards immigrating to Cuba. High winds and heavy seas sent the ship far off course. A collision with Long Reef damaged the ship. Much of the cargo and all of the passengers were safely removed. The captain and crew remained aboard. Many people tried to remove the water from Lugano and repair it, but after several weeks, they abandoned their efforts. Today, the Lugano remains on Long Reef, almost 8 meters below water.
Many visitors to Biscayne National Park choose to explore underwater. Guides lead snorkeling and scuba diving trips. These give visitors the chance to get up close to the park's underwater wildlife as well as its shipwrecks. Visitors can also explore the park on a boat. Canoeing and kayaking are great ways to enjoy Biscayne's mangrove forests. Mangroves are little trees that grow in coastal waters. Many people take a kayak or canoe around the islands and lagoons. At Elliott Key, visitors can set up camp and sleep in the wild. At Boca Chica Key, visitors can explore a lighthouse. The lighthouse has become a symbol of Biscayne National Park. It was built in the 1930s by Mark Honeywell, one of the island's former owners. The deck at the top of the 20-meter-tall lighthouse provides beautiful views of the ocean and the nearby islands. The top of the lighthouse also offers views of Miami Beach's famous skyline. But visitors to Biscayne National Park probably are not there to see skyscrapers and city lights. The beauty in Biscayne is quiet waters, rustling mangroves, and, if you're lucky, a visit with a manatee. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.